welcome you to the 7th annual Project Shalom Bayis Benefit. Project Shalom Bayis was founded by the Daughters of Israel in 1984. And the purpose of Project Shalom Bayis is to make qualified therapy available to couples through referral and or financial assistance if needed. This is done in an anonymous, confidential manner with the support of our community's rabbis. Today, Project Shalom Bayis has serviced close to 200 couples in the Chicago community. Besides being a resource for couples who need therapeutic help, Project Shalom Bayis therapy is funded for needy couples, and the dollar amount can be as high as $2,000 per couple per year. So the need is very great. We thank all the therapists for their mesirat nefesh in working with our couples. We thank our community's rabbis for their advice and their cooperation on our behalf. We thank all of you for your generous financial support and for your emotional support by being here with us tonight. Our program tonight promises to be very informative. Our chair people, Heidi Davis, Connie Shapiro, and Rachel Weingarten, have left no stone unturned. Thank you. I would also like to thank the Shalom Bayis Committee, whose work during the year required tremendous empathy, sensitivity, and confidentiality. They are Michelle Alvin, Dana Becker, Essie Deutsch, Connie Golden, Leah Eupert, Tila Lissman, and Faith Siegel. We are indeed fortunate to have Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro with us tonight. Rabbi Shapiro is the Rav of Congregation Sha'arei Tfila of North Miami Beach. He is a popular speaker, and we are grateful that he took time from his busy schedule and personal life to share his thoughts with us on this important topic. Tonight's lecture is being taped. Tapes can be ordered at the sign-in table after the lecture. There are also copies of previous lecture tapes if you wish to avail yourself of them. The topic tonight is securing your home insurance. Before we start, and before I ask Rabbi Shapiro to come to the podium, I would ask that if you have cell phones, that you please turn them off, just in deference and respect to the speaker so that we're not disturbed in our topic. Please welcome Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro.
This morning when I left South Florida, one of my misfallen told me it's 92 degrees in Chicago, don't bring a coat. I wondered about this follow bus. Does he like me or doesn't he? I no longer wonder. But I am very makir toiv to Project Shalom Bayis for asking me to come, and together in the about 1 hour that we have, I hope that we can be inspired together so that the Shalom Bayis that we do have becomes even greater and something even more of a Bayis Ne'emun B'Yisrael. I will tell you that from the few times I've been in the last year to Chicago, at least, although it's not 92 degrees, I have yet to be called to come out in December or January. And for that, I'm very grateful. The invitations have been September. The invitations have been April and May. So until we'll see if it's real Mesirat Nefesh or I would get called in December and January, then I don't know how quickly I would say yes. Lloyd's of London will insure absolutely everything and anything except the success of a marriage. They realize that only the man and the wife and the blessings of God can possibly ensure the success of a marriage. And that's why I chose this evening. We didn't come here to speak about insuring your house insurance. You want to insure your house insurance? Call Lloyd's of London. But if you want to insure your home insurance, the bias nemun b'Yisroel, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu has it in mind, in Shemayim, they won't help. It's only something we can do, our spouses help us with, and of course, ultimately with Siyata Dishmaya. So let's see what we can learn about securing, or at least trying to insure, your home insurance. Someone recently told me about a case that was brought to the family court in England. And the star witness was going to be an Altayid, a Rav who was maybe 80, 85 years old, and he slips into the courtroom to be the star witness. Everybody's watching this short, bent-over Yid, long, flowing white beard, kapata down to the floor, Hamburg over his head, weighed down with gemoras, tzitzis hanging on the side, and he walks up to take the witness stand. And right away, the judge sizes up the situation, what he's going to have on his hands, so he yells to the bailiff, and he says, "Bailiff, go get us a Yiddish interpreter." So the bailiff runs, and he gets one, and the Alta Yid realizes, he hops on, he realizes what's going on. So he stands erect, and he faces the judge, and then he says, I don't have an English accent, you'll forgive me, but he says, "Your Honor, if it pleases the court, I'll have you know that I hold a doctorate in English literature from Cambridge University. I'm quite conversant in the King's English, and we needn't have an interpreter to render into the vernacular." They're staring at this Altayid. And all of a sudden, Mitamol, the interpreter, turns to the judge and he says, "Has the Altayid helped yourself? Has the Cambridge here? Or not this new interpreter?" Every one of us have a mission. And every one of us are entrusted with a particular job. And unfortunately, more often than not, we don't understand what our job is. We blow the opportunity. If you take a look in the very beginning of Parshas Vayera, three malachim came to Avram and Sarah. Rashi says, why three? One malach was to go ahead and to heal Avram Avinu, it was after his bris milah. The other malach, the angel, was to go ahead and to inform Sarah Be'ezus Hashem shall have a Yitzchak. And the third malach was to go ahead and destroy Sodom. Rashi concludes by saying, She'ein malach echad, because no one malach, Oysus Shtei Shlichus, can possibly do two missions. And thus he needed three for three separate jobs. One for Avram, to heal him, one for Sarah, for Yitzchak, and one to destroy Sodom. If you take a look a little while later, a few psukim later, the malachim inquired of Avram Avinu, they said, Aye Sora Ishtecha, where's Sora your wife? To which he answered, she's in the oil, she's in the tent. Rashi clearly says the malachim knew exactly where Sarah was. So why, pray tell, did they inquire? So Rashi gives a few pshatim. One pshat Rashi tells us is the malachim dafka specifically asked Avram Avinu where Sarah was. Shkedei lechaviv, the lashon of Rashi, lechavva al baila, to make there be a greater chivuv. So that you show the husband, one is to inquire about the wife. You show the wife, inquire about the husband. Reb Moshe, say at the side of the Kodesh Lebracha, they say, even at the very end of his life, used to call the Rebbetzin twice a day. How could you not call your spouse twice a day to see how they are? He was incredulous. So the angels wanted to create this chivul, this ava, this shalom bias between Avram and Sarah, and therefore they inquired as to her whereabouts. So Rav Pam, Zeicher Tzadik, the Kodesh Lebracha says, I don't understand. That's a separate shlichus. It's the shlichus of Shalom Bayis. So you should have needed and required another angel. If it's true that two angels cannot do one shlichus, and they were already taken up with their own shlichus, where's the shliach? Where's the angel for Shalom Bayis? Zokter Pam Zatzal, vice versa, it must be. Shalom Bayis is not a shlichus. Shalom Bayis is not a one-time mission I'll fulfill now for 15 minutes. Now I have a job to be nice. Now I have a job to speak properly. Now I have a job. That's not Shalom Bayis. Shalom Bayis is the very fabric of our existence. Shalom bayis and chiyuv ben ish leishto, proper talking, treating each other with care and concern, that's not a shlichus. That's not something you do once in a while when you want. Zokter Pam, you don't need a malach for shalom bayis, because shalom bayis is the very essence of our existence. And the yesod, the root of our marriage, is to break on shalom bayis. And afterwards, you have shlichus. You have this malach teaching you this, and that malach teaching you that. But when it comes to shalom bayis, that's the bread and butter. That's the basics. So what can we possibly do to re-understand and redefine what our mission is? It's not something just for a little while. It's something that is the fabric of our existence. So what can we offer tonight? A few things to possibly be mechate, so that we can realize that which Rapam says, it's something that you work on 24/7. There's a very interesting pasuk. The pasuk tells us in Balei Sod Perek Yud-Bei, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, he uses the following expression: Loichein Avdi Moshe, my servant Moshe is different than everyone else, V'chol Beisi Ne'amon Hu, because he is, and the ultimate compliment I can give him is, B'chol Beisi Ne'amon Hu. Now, how would we translate Ne'amon? Well, we always throw around the term Bayis Ne'amon B'Yisrael. And how do you translate that, Bayis Ne'amon B'Yisrael? A home where there's loyalty, a home where people are trustworthy. Is that what it means about Moshe Rabbeinu, B'chol Beisi Ne'amon Hu? He's a loyal, trustworthy servant? How do you understand this definition of Ne'amon? So take a look at the Netziv. The Netziv defines the word Ne'amon on the pasuk by saying, someone is Ne'amon if mi sheyesh biyodei la'asos, he or she has the ability to do something, ve'eino oise, and they show restraint. They show a little bit of sablonos and a little bit of control. Take for an example, take Grenada. The country Grenada is not attacking the United States. Is anyone going to say that the reason that Grenada is not attacking the United States of America is because they're loyal? Ah, what loyalty? Nonsense! They're not attacking the United States, and if they attack the United States, we flip them away like a box of toothpicks! That's why they're not attacking the United States. It's not a din in loyalty. It's a din, and they have some sagal. And they know they wouldn't stand the chance for 5 seconds against such a country and a power like the United States. But when someone has the ability to destroy, when someone has the ability to use or abuse their kayak, and they don't, that's restraint. That apparently is the definition of Ne'amon. Why does that refer to Moshe Rabbeinu? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Netziv explains, knew the Shem HaMefayrish. He knew the special name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu had power to do unbelievable things in the world. And yet, he controlled himself. He showed restraint. He held back. Therefore, Zokta Pasuk, behold, Beisi Ne'amon Hu, he is the ultimate of a Ne'amon, and then it explains, because Misha Yesh B'Yodei La'Asos Ve'Eino Oiseh, he could have used that Koyach, he could have destroyed with whatever Shem HaMefayrish he knew, but Eino Oiseh, he didn't. That's the definition of Ne'amon. Ne'amon does not merely mean to show your loyalty and to show you're trustworthy. Ne'amon means to show restraint, to be in control. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. Build a bayis Ne'amon b'Yisrael. There is no one closer than a spouse to each other. Each who has the ability more than anyone else in the world to use things against them, to destroy them verbally. Why do you always have to do that? Haven't I told you a million times to stop? No one more than a husband to a wife and a wife to a husband have that ability. They have the yodei la'asos in their hands to do, and oh boy, can they if they want it. But a bayis Ne'amon b'Yisrael means that you have the ability, but ve'eino oiseh. You know how to control yourself. You know how to show restraint. You know how not to be critical and criticize every single move and every nuance, iota, and motion. That's what it means to be a Ne'amon. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from every one of us to create a bayis Ne'amon b'Yisrael, Ne'amonus means show control, show restraint. The pasuk tells us that Yaakov Avinu when he called in his grandchildren Ephraim and Manasseh, the Pasuk tells us in Vayechi, Perek Mem Ches, Sikhel es Yodov. He switched his hands. And all the Mepharshim asked the Shaila, why did Yaakov Avinu, Sikhel es Yodov, switch his hands? Turn the people, don't switch the hands. What is indicated by switching the hands? I recently heard a beautiful shot. If I am facing any one of you, straight away, we're looking and facing each other, and I stick out my left hand, it will touch your right hand. When I stick out my right hand, it will touch your left hand. The right hand and the right side, the yamin of a person, represents their strengths, the beautiful things they bring into a marriage, the thing that they do better than anyone else. But the left side, the tzad shmol of an individual, the left hand, represents the weaknesses, the chesronos, the faults that we have. How many times do I have to tell you to put the lid on the toothpaste? Every night I have to trip over the slippers when I'm taking the kid to the bathroom. That's the tzad shmol, some of our chesronos. You know what Yaakov Avinu is teaching us? Most often, do you know how we face our spouse? We take our left hand and we put it on their right hand. That means when it comes to their right, the things that they do that we should appreciate, we put our left hand on it. Not such a big deal. Please. It's really not such a mila. Many people can do that better than you can. But when it comes to the right of a person, when it comes to the left of a person, which represents their chesroinus, those faults that eat at you, what do? You put your right hand right on those faults, and you accentuate them, you highlight them, you put them in neon letters, you make a big deal out of it. Zok Yaakov Avinu, Tzikel es Yodov, switch your hands, put the right on her right, put the left on her left. When it comes to the right, the things that she can do better than anyone else, put your right hand on it. Tell her about it. Show her your appreciation. Let it be known on a daily basis that there are things that you do that I appreciate more than you can imagine, and I'm going to start expressing it. And when it comes to the left, when it comes to the chesroinus of things that bother you, put your left hand on it. A person doesn't have to go ahead and accentuate them. A person can surely try to sweep them under the carpet. That's what Yaakov Avinu teaches us. When it comes to the milos, build them up. When it comes to the chesroinus, look away. So I thought to myself, that's an easy way to start. But surely it's easier said than done. To ask someone in a marriage, when it comes to the milos, when it comes to the beautiful things your spouse does, only speak about them, only praise them. And when it comes to the chesroinus, look away. Don't make a big deal out of it. While that's something Yaakov Avinu is teaching us, and every one of us should make sure to incorporate in our new definition of bias mammon b'Yisrael, surely it's easier said than done. So if a person does have to criticize, and if a person does have to raise issues with their spouses, their children, their family members, with whom they're so close, how should a person do it? There's an unbelievable Gemara, the Gemara's family Menachos, Daf Samach Ches Amud Beis. And the Gemara tells us a story in Menachos. Reb Tarfon had a particular question. He wasn't able to answer the question. A student of his, Yehuda Bereb Nechemia, got up in front of his Rosh Hashiva and he gave the answer. After he gave the answer, the Gemara says, Sohahu Panav Shal Yehuda ben Nechemia. A smile of content came across the lips of Yehuda ben Nechemia, as if to say, I showed up my Rosh Hashiva. I came up with a teret that he couldn't. And he felt good. He felt very smug about himself. Rabbi Akiva was watching the reaction of Yehuda ben Nechemia, of this look of contentment. He looks at Yehuda and Rabbi Akiva says, Yehuda, because your face curled into a look of smugness and feeling good about yourself, Timahani, I wonder if Tairik Yamin, if you're going to live much longer. Unfortunately, the Gemara goes on to say this story took place around Pesach time. A few weeks later, around Shavuos time, mamish like it is now, Rabbi Akiva came back to the city and he said, "What's with Reb Yehuda Berem Nechemya? Where is he?" So they said he passed away a little while ago. He was Hakan Nifter, like you said. And that's the end of the Gemara. Agav, you can take out a tremendous lesson about kavod for our gedolim and how a person should treat leaders with respect. There is a pshat, a pirish on the Gemara called the Shita Mekubetas. The Shita Mekubetas says that when Rabbi Akiva addressed Yehuda and he gave him that unadulterated musar, the Shita Mekubetas adds one word. That instead of addressing him Yehuda, the Shita Mekubetas on the side says he addressed him Yehuda, and then again he said Yehuda. That's the end of the Shita Mekubetas. I mean, the question begs to be asked. From a Gemara in Menachos, from a Shita Mekubetas where usually you expect something dazzling, all he's telling me is you should just know that when Rabbi Akiva addressed Yehuda, and he had to give him that full musar, he called him Yehuda and again Yehuda. Who cares? What difference does it make how he referred to him? The point is he gave him the musar. The pshat is as follows. The Shita Mekubetas was bothered with a question. Rabbi Akiva, you are the author of the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamoicha. You are the very personification of love your neighbor, love your chaver, as much as you love yourself. If that's who you are, how could you have done it? How could you have given such full, unadulterated musar to Yehuda? You dressed him down. You raised him over the coals. You, the author of the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamoicha, how'd you do it? You know what the Shita Mekubetas answers? We know that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu called Abraham, he said to him twice the name Abraham, and again Abraham. What does Rashi tell us why he addressed him Abraham twice? Lashon Chiba. When you address someone twice, it's an expression of concern. It's an expression of deep love. That's why he said Abraham, Abraham. That's what the Shita Mekubetas means. He didn't give him Musar by calling him Yehuda. Before he gave him Musar, do you know what he said? Yehuda, Yehuda! I love you! Lashon Chiba! I really, really love you! But you can't do what you did. And then he went on to give Musar. That's the way to give criticism. If a person can't always switch the hand and build up the right with the right and build up the left with the left. But there are those instances where we have to sit down and address an issue. There are those instances where we have to get real and say there's something that's troubling me. What right do we have to address our spouse with just Yehuda? When you start by saying Yehuda, Yehuda, it's a different ballgame. Everything takes on a different picture. You show that the Chiba's there, the Ava's there, and now that you've said Yehuda, Yehuda, you have to say, there's something that's troubling me, let's work out. Because you know, we all know good and well, that the moment that we start with just the Yehuda, which means we're attacking, we're going to be attacked back. We're jumping, we're going to be jumped back. I recently heard that there was a couple. They mamish were not speaking. 3-4 days, he had akshonis, she had akshonis. They didn't say a word to each other. They didn't even say a syllable to each other. Finally, it was Wednesday night, and the husband was in a little bit of a dilemma. Because the next morning, Thursday morning, he had to catch a 7:45 flight to Texas. He had to be up 5 a.m. But he can't tell his wife, I want to get up 5 a.m. He's not speaking to her. So he goes to bed early. He has to be up 5 a.m., catch the flight at 4 to 8. He puts a note. He writes her a note on her pillow, and he says, make sure I'm up at 5 a.m. And he puts it on her pillow. And he goes to sleep. And he sleeps, and he sleeps. He wakes up. He looks at the alarm clock at 8:20 in the morning. He jumps out of bed, he's about to have a full-blown coronary, about to lace into his wife, where she didn't wake him up, and as he's about to give it to her, now he's willing to speak, by the way, as he's about to give it to her, he looks on his pillow and he sees that his wife wrote him a note, it's 5 a.m., get up. We know.
If we speak Yehuda, we're going to be answered Yehuda. If we address an issue in one way, it's only going to snowball. And the ramifications are going to build and build until we don't even remember what the argument was about. But the moment we address our spouse, or anyone for that matter, by opening a conversation by saying, Yehuda, Yehuda, Lashon Chiba, the love is there. You have to realize how much I care about you. And then go on to address the tzad shmol, the left, the things that you may want to be critical of. It can only be done if you begin by saying, Yehuda, Yehuda. I recently realized, I just thought to myself, Shalom Bayis, if you just switch around the letters of the word Shalom, you get Mushal. A Mushal is a parable. If you want to know how to achieve Shalom Bayis, make it a Mushal. Ask yourself, how would you want to be responded to in a certain situation? How would you want to be handled with in a certain situation? However you would want to be spoken to, however you would want someone to take care of you, Mushal. Realize that that's exactly what the other person wants. And if we realize the mushal in every situation in life, that's one way to achieve that shalom bayis. There's a pasuk in Mishle, Perek Tes. The pasuk tells us, Al toichach letz, don't rebuke and give musar to a letz, a jokester, pen yisno eka. Because if you give musar to a jokester, he'll hate you. Hoikach lechacham, better you should rebuke than give musar to a wise person, v'yavecha, and that person will love you. And many people ask, what do you mean? The one you should be giving musar to is the letz. The chacham doesn't need musar, but that's the way to read the pasuk. Don't give musar to a letz, only give musar to a chacham. Listen to a pshat from the shlav. Or you sigiv venlach and scintillating. Says the shlav, Al toichach letz. Don't rebuke a person by calling them a letz. You're no good. You'll never amount to anything. Why can't you be more like so-and-so? Pen yisna eka. They'll hate you. You'll never get in the first base. Hoichach lechacham. Give them musar by saying, you're such a wonderful person. You're a chacham. You are so special in my eyes. They'll ultimately love you for it. And that's not only when it comes to a spouse, that's when it comes to our children, that's when it comes to any person. What right do we have to give someone musar by just saying, you're a letz, you're no good, you never do it the right way? You're not going to get anywhere with just Yehuda. A person you want to give musar, rebuke in a way that you, the person feels that you're building them up, you're not putting them down. You're using them, you're not, God forbid, abusing them. Because when you start by telling a person, they're a chacham, Yehuda, Yehuda, even if you have to address the tzad shmol, even if you have to bring out from under the carpet those things that you are critical of, at least know how to do it. There was an elderly woman. She had three sons. She had Boruch, she had David, and she had Chaim. She was about 85 years old. She went and she retired. And she, Baruch Hashem, raised three beautiful sons who they went on to raise three beautiful mishpachas. Everyone, Baruch, David, Chaim, they were all extremely successful, very much a philanthropist, each in their own city. When she turned 85, they all wanted to send the elderly mother some type of gift. Something that the mother should really see how much they appreciate everything that she did for them all these years. So Baruch went ahead and he bought his mother the most unbelievable 2003, even before the cars made it to the showroom, he bought his 85-year-old mother a souped-up Lexus with every luxury and every gadget that one could even think of the car had, and he sent it to her. David goes ahead and he buys his mother the most exquisite palatial mansion that's possible. All the gashmias, the rooms, it was absolutely exquisite. And Chaim went ahead, he knew that his mother, when she got very elderly, her eyesight started to go. And yet she was a woman who loved learning. So he went out and he bought a very, very expensive bird. A bird that had the ability to read the Chumash to read, the Navi to read Halacha, and the mother, even with her eyesight, would be able to sit there and to listen to the words of the Chumash, the Navi, the Halacha, and she'd be able to learn. She couldn't read, but at least the bird would be able to say the words, and therefore she would be able to learn. All three gifts are sent to the mother. The mother writes them back, each a letter. She sends Baruch, the one who sent her a car, a letter, and she says, Baruch, a car? What are you sending me a car for? Where do I go? I'm in the apartment. I go to the grocery. Maybe I'll go to the tailor. Where is the car? What's with the car? I don't travel more than a mile in 5 years. She sends a letter to David. David, a mansion I need. What's for a mansion? I have it. Now I have to clean all those rooms? And now I have to make the whole thing should always be spotless like this. I have one room, a little kitchenette, and a little bathroom. And I clean it. From you I needed that? What kind of favor is that? And by the time she sent the letter, the chicken was delicious. I think that it's time that we start showing appreciation and realizing the gift that our Kodesh Baruch Hu has given us. Before Chas V'Shalom, some people are no longer able to appreciate that gift. More often than not, we are given a gift in a spouse, in children, in families, and whatever it may be. The chicken was delicious. We just don't get it. Do you know that the Nesi'im, the leaders of Klal Yisrael, when they went to contribute to the Mishnah, they contributed last. They were severely punished for contributing last. They contributed last, figuring, I will contribute whatever it is that needs to be made up. Whatever the deficit is, we'll contribute. The Nesi'im were punished for that. One way that the Nesi'im, they were punished, the letter Yud was removed from their name. And the reason the Nesi'im were punished is they needed to be taught a lesson. You think that it's your money that's supporting the Mishkan? You think that the Mishkan needs your money? It's just the opposite. You need the Mishkan. You need HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is the Mishkan that's supporting you, not vice versa. And that's why in the Sefer Shiyu Rebina it says, if you take the word Nesi'im, the word Nesi'im in English denotes those that carry. Nesi'im, those that carry. If you remove the Yud, you can rearrange the Nekudais and the word could be Nisa'im, those that are carried. You think you're Nesi'im, that you're the ones who do the carrying, that you're God's gift to the world. I'm removing the Yud. Nisa'im, the Mishkan carries you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu carries you. The Mishkan doesn't need you. You need the Mishkan. It dawned on me, when we talk about marriage, what word do we use? Nisu'in. For that reason, we shouldn't have the attitude when we're facing a spouse, you need me. It's I who contribute, and without me you'd be lost. No. Nisa'im. Do you know how valuable our spouse is? Do you know that it's not us who helps them, but each one has to have the attitude, they help me. They help me achieve my shleimus. They help me with something that no one else can. That's why the word is called nisuin. It's the word for marriage. Remember, it's not nisiyim that you're needed. Nisoyim, you help the other, and the other helps you. There's a tremendous Rashi in Parshas Vayakel. When all of the contributions were made for the Beis Hamikdash, the kiyar, which was the large copper basin, actually did not just come from any copper. Surely you know the famous Rashi. The kiyar came from the polished copper that the women, the wives, used to use in the field. The wives used to be in the field while the men were out doing whatever labor it was. And they would take a mirror and they would, with the mirror, beautify themselves. And the mirror of copper, they would beautify themselves so that in the evening when their husbands came home, there would be a desire that the husband and the wife should be together. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to use that copper. If it came about through the mirror that was used for the husband to be with the wife and vice versa, he didn't want to use the copper. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's that mirror I want you to use, it's that copper I want you to use, and the kiyar should be as big and as much copper as there is. Do you know why? Because as a result of the spouses being together, there was a hamshacha, there was a continuity of Klal Yisrael. And therefore those mirrors are priceless to me. Make sure those dazzling mirrors are used, every one of them. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says that when the husband came home at night and they faced each other after the wife spent all day with the mirror, the husband came home, they looked at each other. Rashi says this is what they said to each other. He said to his wife, Ani no'eh mimech. I'm better than you. I'm prettier than you. Rashi. And she said to her husband, Ani no'eh mimcha. No, I'm prettier than you. I'm better than you. What kind of shrach is that? The husband says to the wife, Ani no'eh mimcha. I'm better than you. And she says to him, Ani no'eh mimcha. No, you have it wrong. I'm better than you. How does that conform with what we said? Nisuin, you need the other. Do you know what I believe the pshat is? When he said to her, Ani no'eh mimcha, he did not mean, I'm better than you. He meant, I'm better because of you. And she looked at him and she said, no, Ani no'eh mimcha. I'm better because of you. And that's the argument they have. Each spouse said to me, Suin, from the lashon, I need you. And the other one said, no, I need you. And I'm better because of you. And I'm better because of you. Zokhtari Baruch Shalom. That's the copper I want used in my Beis HaMikdash. That's the copper that will build the Bayis Nem of Yisrael. When there is the realization that each one says to the other, I am better because of you. And without you, I would not possibly achieve my Shleimus. Just this morning, right, there's a little bit of time to think on the plane. Just this morning, I thought to myself, why is it that from all the relationships, we have the most difficulty when it comes to a relationship with the spouse to show that appreciation, to show how much the other person, each one needs the other, like Rashi just said. And it dawned on me. We're holding now almost by Lag BaOmer. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos that during this time, 24,000 of Rebbe Akiva's Talmidim died. Which Rebbe Akiva? The one who knew how to give Musa. And the Gemara tells us, why did they die? Shelenoagu kavod zelazeh. They didn't show kavod one to the other. And I didn't know, what does that mean they didn't show kavod one to the other? They were nasty to each other? They were critical of each other? So I thought maybe the pshat is as follows. If we want to know the value of an object, how in today's society do we know the value of an object? Well, it depends. If it's something of Gashmias or if it's something of Ruchnias. If the item is one of Gashmias, there's only one way to know the value. The price tag. You may not think that that trinket is worth $5,600, but people pay it. You may not think that car is worth $45,000, but people pay it. So the price tag in any Dabar Gashmi pretty much indicates its value. Is that the way it works in a Dabar Ruchani? I don't think so. You go to a Sefer Torah, you're going to tell me the Sefer Torah is only worth $25,000 because that's the price tag? Nonsense. Who can put a value on a Sefer Torah? The only way we know its value is based on the kavod, based on the honor we show it. If God forbid, a Sefer Torah falls, we fast 30 days, we fast 40 days, we turn over an entire city. That's how you know the value. How much kavod do you attach to something? Tefillin we have tremendous honor for. But if tefillin falls, there are different halachos. We don't fast 30 days, we fast a day. If it was in two coverings, we'll get tzedakah. Mezuzah. Mezuzah also is something very special. But if mezuzah falls, we'll do a few different... A sefer falls, we kiss it and pick it up. Everything has its own level. You know its value based on how much kavod, how much honor you attach to it. When the Talmidim of Rebbe Akiva were learning at Teshuva, Nogu Kavod, they didn't value each other. They took each other for granted. There was no more of that appreciation one for the other. And if you don't have the appreciation, there's no reason to go on. I realize, why is it that when it comes to our family, we may have such a difficult time? Family and familiarity are the same letters. We're so familiar with them. We're with them all the time. That familiarity is something terrible. Because as a result of our family and having the familiarity, we lose the kavod. We no longer have the appreciation. When it comes to our spouses and our children, all of a sudden the laws of please and thank you and holding open doors and proper etiquette no longer exist? That's the curse of familiarity. I have to tell you the truth. My wife said, whatever you do, don't speak about me. I want to tell you something about my wife. 2 weeks ago, there was a simcha in my wife's family. Her sister had her first child, a baby boy. So my wife, I wanted she should go. I encouraged her to go to Montreal, where her family lives. She was to leave on a Thursday, and she was going to come back Monday afternoon. She should go 4 or 5 days to be with her parents, my in-laws, and the simcha. So I brought her to the airport on Thursday. We have Baruch Hashem 2 little daughters. So my daughters and I, we went in the car to the airport. We wished my wife well. And then I have to tell you, you know how when you go on a trip with the family and it's going to be 200 miles to Disney World and you just turn the corner and the kid says, are we there yet? Are we stopping yet? I was still in the airport terminal and I said to the kids, is it Monday yet? How close is this to Monday? And then I spent those 4 days doing the things that for a large amount of time, many of us may take for granted. You know, the things that take up no time. The dressing the children, the arranging the meals, the cleaning up, the cleaning the house, the carpooling. I don't know if we're allowed to say that word. I want to tell you something I hope not to do again. I'm usually in shul very late at night. I'll eat supper with my family maybe 5 or 6 o'clock. At 11, 11.30, I'll call my wife, and I'll say, so, Mimi, what'd you do all day? I took care of the children. I got them ready for bed. I made the meal, and I cleaned up the house. Yeah, but what'd you do the rest of the day? I mean, what did you do all day? All day. I'm not asking that question anymore. It happens to be a terrific lesson. If anybody wants there to be a greater appreciation, get rid of that familiarity so you can greater appreciate the different things that a person does. I'm not suggesting you have to send someone on a trip, but do something to try to see. And it's not only for the husbands to try to come and have a greater appreciation for all the things that the wives do that you take for granted. The wife also. It's very difficult, some of the things that the husbands do. Whether it's always tefillah d'tzibur, trying to bring the oystahalten kite into the home, the thin of bunin, going to shiurim, trying to pay the whatever it may be, financially. But if you remove the familiarity, if you try to recreate a greater appreciation, then each one will say, not I'm better than you, but I'm better because of you. I'll tell you a maisa that happened to me a few years ago. My father, Zatzal, was nifter almost 5 years ago. And when I was going for the first yard site to Eretz Yisrael, so there was no direct flight from South Florida, I went via Newark. And the first yard site was extremely difficult for me. Emotionally, I knew it was going to be. I was only going to Eretz Yisrael in and out for a day. Maybe it was a 2-day Sach HaKol. I didn't want to do anything else on the first yard site. I knew emotionally it was going to be a very draining trip. I knew physically it was going to be a draining trip. So I went, I flew to Newark, I checked in, and then I went to a phone booth. I wanted to be myself. I didn't want anyone to hassle me. I wanted to think about going for the first yard site. I knew it would be extremely painful. I don't think I was seated more than 10 minutes, and all of a sudden I hear, Mr. Shapiro, I was thrilled to be called Mr. Mr. Shapiro, please come to the Continental counter. So I'm thinking, face, mirror, what now? Leave me alone. So I walked up to the counter, and I figured it's going to be some type of change or some type of hassle, you know, that there could be so many different things, that technicalities that need to be worked out. So I went over, and they motioned I speak to a woman supervisor. I was able to tell from the way she was dressed and handling herself, she was obviously the chief supervisor. She says, Mr. Shapiro, let me see your ticket. Here I am, handing her the ticket, mumbling to Hillam, begging that nothing go wrong. She punches in the computer quite a bit, and then she hands me back the ticket, and she says, here's another ticket, have a wonderful flight. I said, what do you mean another ticket? Well, what happened to my first ticket? She said, you were in coach, and we upgraded you through business class, through first class, to mamash a $6,000 seat, the most expensive seat on the airplane. And I'm looking for the hidden cameras. What's the joke? She says, no joke, really, enjoy your flight. I said, that's it? You mean, aren't you going to tell me why? So she said, well, you see, we oversold coach by one seat. I said, oh, so you had to do some type of lottery with the computer, and I won. She said, no, that's not it at all. I'll tell you why we picked you. Do you see that person over there? I said, of course I see that person over there. That's the woman who checked me in about a half hour ago. So she came to me, the head supervisor, and made me aware. She apprised me of the situation that we have to bump. She said, thank you, and have a nice day, bump him up. I felt great. And once I saw this supervisor, I said, how are you? How are you doing? She said, Shapiro, don't push it. For about 3 days, till I got back to North Miami Beach, I've got to tell you, I felt wonderful about myself. Oh, whoa, thank you, and a Kiddush Hashem, and, you know, what a terrific reward. Afterwards, the story made me sick. We're rewarded for a thank you, have a nice day, is something that turns over an airplane? What's going on? When did it start that the basics, the decency, the derechos, the thank you, how are you, being courteous, that's something that's a nimishuras hadin? I remember when I was here in Chicago a year ago, I kind of said over, did you ever notice the foods that our grandparents made? Everything that our grandparents made, rugelach, knedlach, kremslach, kreplach, lach for you. What's that do for you? What do we eat today? Bisli, Prili, Nestle. Everything's for me. What can I get out of it? That's terrible. And nowhere, unfortunately, do I think it's more true than with our family because of that familiarity. We're so familiar with them, we think that those laws of basic decency, care and concern, thank you, how are you, don't apply. They sure do. There's two psukim that seem to contradict each other. There's a pasuk in Mishlei that says, Matza Isha, Matza Toiv. I found a wife, Matza Toiv, I found nothing better. And then there's another pasuk in Kehelis that says, and please allow me to finish before you want to throw things at me. The pasuk in Kehelis says, "Umoitze ani mar mi moves efa isha." I'd rather be dead than married to this woman. It's a pasuk in Kehelis. How pray tell that the pasuk in Mishlei saying, "Motze isha motze toy"? There's nothing greater. There's nothing better than being married to this woman. And another pasuk say, "Umoitze ani efa isha mar mi moves." Worse than being dead is being married to this woman. Do you know what I think the pshat is? Look at the phraseology of the two psukim. When it comes to the pasuk that speaks about good, it says, Motza Isha, you are interested. What can I do for her? What can I do to make her life more enjoyable? How can I look out for my spouse? If you care about the other person and you agree you're better because of the other person, Motza Tari, there's nothing better. But if it's umoitze ani, what can I get out of the deal? How can I do it for my selfish, self-aggrandizing reasons? Marmi mothis. It's worse than death. And that's the shaila. Is it going to be the luck society, or is it going to be the least society?
what might be one of the reasons why we have such a difficult time? I recently saw a comment where it said that a man, before he married, a man was engaged to a woman, and while he was engaged to her, he stayed up all night thinking about every word she said. But now that he's married to her, he falls asleep even before she finishes saying it. Why? Why is that? Actually, to tell you the truth, the quote said it the other way around, about the woman falling asleep. But when I said it over to a particular woman, she says, it's not true. You got to say it the other way. So however you think it's true, why is that? What happens in the marriage? So listen to something unbelievable. I'm sure you're aware of the fact that the world is 6,000 years long. And every day of the week, Sun, Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, corresponds to 1,000 years. The first 1,000, Yom Rishon. The 4,000, Yom Revi, and so on. Mayra Viradoisei, right now, we're in the year 5762. Where are we holding Kifi the Seder Hashonim? Not only are we holding on Yom Shishi, not only are we holding on Erev Shabbos, but we are holding on Erev Shabbos Acharei Chatzos. We are Achar Tzohirayim, we are Mamish. At the tail end, in 5762, you'll figure it out according to the Cheshbon, we are in the heart of an Erev Shabbos. What's an Erev Shabbos? What is the one character trait that best defines an Erev Shabbos? What one word comes to your mind when we think of an Erev Shabbos? There's the Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph that says, if a person is running, usually the person is chayiv. But then the Gemara says, what if the person is running in Rishus HaRabim on Erev Shabbos? The person is running on an Erev Shabbos, what's the halacha? The Gemara answers, he's potter. You know why? Mipnei sherotz b'rishus. Which means that a running on Erev Shabbos is understandable. Because the Gemara means to say that the words that best depict an Erev Shabbos is a running, a behala, a not stopping. That's the curse we're living in the year 5762. The beauty is that Erev Shabbos, and it's almost Shabbos. The chisaron is, we're running with the Shamsun of Olher says. This world is called Aretz. You know what etymologically the root of the word Aretz is? Ruts. We're running and running, and we don't stop. We don't have time for anyone. We don't show the care for anyone, because all we're doing is running. Somebody recently told me an unbelievable maisa. There was a very wealthy an American. He had retired, and he was sitting on a beautiful dock, and he was fishing. And there is this retired American fishing, and comes up next to him a very poor fellow and starts to fish. So the rich, retired American says to the poor fellow, what are you doing? He says, I'm fishing. He said, what are you fishing for? He says, because I have a family to feed, I catch a few fish, and after I catch the few fish, I'm able to go home, I'm able to cut them up, feed the family, and then tomorrow I'll come and fish again. He says, you fool. The rich American says, I have a better idea. Why don't you stay longer and catch many more fish? So the poor man says, what's that going to do for me? So the rich man says, what do you mean? With all the fish, you'll go ahead and you'll sell them, and then maybe you'll be able to go ahead and actually open a fish market. He says, what's that going to do for me? So he says, what do you mean, what's that going to do? After you open up a fish market, you'll make enough profit, enough business, you'll open up a whole chain. He says, what's that going to do for me? He says, what do you mean? After that, you'll have people manage a store, you'll go public, you'll have the stock market, you'll play the market, you'll make money, you'll be a phenomenally wealthy person. He says, what's that going to do for me? He says, because then, after you make millions of dollars, you'll be able, like me, you'll be able to retire, you'll be able to come here and fish. He says, that's what I'm doing now. We are living through the curse of ruts. We're running and running, and we're not stopping to show that appreciation. I just want to read to you, and then we will begin just to say one final thought before we close. I just want to read something to you that I once read here, but I think that if we hear it, it will help put a lot of what we said in the proper perspective. Somebody gave this to me a number of years ago, and the page says, I dreamed I had an interview with God. Come in, God said. So you'd like to interview me? If you have the time, I said. God smiled and said, my time is eternity and is enough to do everything. What questions do you have in mind to ask me? I asked God, what surprises you most about mankind? God answered, that they get bored of being children and are in a rush to grow up, and then they long to be children again. That they lose their health to make money, and then they lose their money to restore their health. That by thinking anxiously about the future, they forget the present such that they live neither for the present nor the future. That they live as if they will never die, and they die as if they've never lived. God's hands took mine, and we were silent for a while, and then I asked, as a parent, what are some of life's lessons you want your children to learn? God replied with a smile, to learn that they cannot make anyone love them, what they can do is let themselves be loved. To learn that what is most valuable is not what they have in their lives, but who they have in their lives. To learn that it is not good to compare themselves to others. All will be judged individually on their own merits, not as a group on a comparison basis. To learn that a rich person is not one who has the most, but one who needs the least. To learn that it only takes a few seconds to open profound wounds in persons we love, and that it takes many years to heal them. To learn to forgive by practicing forgiveness. To learn that there are persons that love them dearly, but simply do not know how to express or show their feelings. To learn that money can buy everything but happiness. To learn that two people can look at the same thing and see it totally different. To learn that a true friend is someone who knows everything about them and likes them anyway. To learn that it is not always enough that they be forgiven by others, but they have to forgive themselves. I sat there for a while enjoying the moment. I thanked him for his time and for all that he has done for me and my family. And he replied, anytime. I'm here 24 hours a day. All you have to do is ask for me and I'll answer. People will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will rarely forget how you made them feel. And I think there's so much to be learned to help us create our bias nem and be strong. So in closing tonight's talk, and I am very grateful to Project Shalom Bias for asking me to come, I'd like to close with something that maybe we don't think of, but if we would, it will help us with everything that we've spoken about until now. That a person should be very careful, build up, put the right on the right, and put the left on the left. But there are instances where you have to criticize and address with the left. But remember, I'll try to less. Don't rebuke someone by calling them no good and by just saying Yehuda. If you do it, it has to be always Yehuda, Yehuda. There's a much greater appreciation when we realize that it's Nisim. We are needed. Each person has to realize that they need the spouse. When one said to the other, it's not I'm better than you, but it's I'm better because of you. And that's the Lashon Nisuin. It is the spouse we need each other, and not that we are the gift to the marriage. But unfortunately, because we're living in a society where everything is so run, and there's no time, with those that we are most familiar, we forget the basics. The li has crept into, unfortunately, our bias and Yisrael. So Baruch Hashem, we know over the last hour some things to be mechazek. But if you would like to know the one reason, more than any other, why it's so crucial and vital, as wonderful as our Shalom Bayis is, to strengthen it, to be mechazek it, so that we have the quintessential paradigm of a Bayis Naman B'Yisrael, it's primarily for one reason. Do you know that in the Haggadah, the middle, there are long psukim that are broken down, where every two or three words are expounded upon by the Baal Haggadah. And it speaks over there about our hardships and our labor. And in the middle of the Haggadah, everything is explained by the Baal Haggadah. There are two words in a pasuk that say, Ve'es amoleinu, our amelus, our work. You know what the Baal Haggadah says? Eile habanim, it refers to the sons.
Like the pasuk tells us, "Kol ben hayilat ayarut tashlichu." Any child is born, throw into the river. Zok the heilig edivrei chayim, the sons of Rebbe zuchusu yavin aleinu. Do you know what the Baal HaGadol is telling us? Et amoleinu. According to the amount of amelech you put into your marriage, according to the shalom bayis that you shtel avek between the spouses, eileh habonim, that will dictate the type of children that we're zeichet to have. Es amoleinu kifi da amelech, kifi how much we see how true it is. If we're sharp with our spouse, our children pick up on it. If we say something that's not 100% emes, we want to know where they get it from, as they're going to do it to us. They're going to do it to the chaverim, and then they're going to do it when they grow up. Es amoleinu. We define the path for our kinderlach. Kifi da amelech we shall avet into our shalom bayis eile habonim. That will dictate our peiros. There is a pasuk that tells us in the very first parak of Shmuel Beis. The parak is known as Kinas David, the lament of David, because it speaks about the downfall of Shaul and Yonasan. And at the very end, you know about the love that Yonasan and David had for each other. I quote a pasuk in Shmuel Beis, parak Aleph, pasuk Chavav. Achi Yonasan, my dear brother Yonasan, this is what David says to him. He says, I love you and admire you. Then he says, Niflasa. The love you have for me is Niflasa. It's a wonder. And the love you have for me is greater, me'avas noshim, than the love women have for each other, for their spouses, whatever it means. Can I ask you a question? What type of shprach is that for David Melech Yisrael? He's talking to Yonasan and he says, your love for me is greater than the love, me'avas noshim, than the love of women, women for each other, women in general, women to men. What type of expression is that? Do you know what David HaMelech means to tell us? David came from Shevet Yehuda, whose mother was Leah. Yonasan came from Binyamin, whose mother was Rachel. What did Rachel do for Leah? Vos tut min nish far Leah. What Rachel did for Leah, the Iber gedeben kan. Everything that she was so mussar, what she was willing to give up for her, that Ava was second to none. So David said to Yonasan, Mithrasa, really I'm wondering, how could you love me so much? I'm going to be coronated the new Melech. I have ripped your family asunder. I have taken the Melucha away from you and Shaul, and now it's mine? How could it be, Vikendazai, that you still love me? And then he realized, my grandmother's Leah. Your grandmother was Rachel. The love that Rachel displayed for Leah, she spelled out back into the family. And that's what David meant. Do you know where you, Yonasan, get your love from? May Ahabat Roshim! From the love of the grandmothers, from the love that your grandmother Rachel had for my grandmother Leah. That's why you can love me so much. Because those women had such an ava, it was mushrash, it was deeply rooted, they shelled it avek into that fabric that we opened up with. Shalom bayis isn't a shlichus, it's our very fabric. And that's what David meant. If you want to know why you love me, me'avas noshim, you got it from the love of the women, the grandmothers, your bubby, to my bubby. And that might be the reason more than anything else. If we continue to maintain our shalom bayis, if we try to be mechazik some of the five or six nekudos we spoke about this last hour, not only will our spouses be more appreciative, our children will. Because es amaleinu eila havonim. Let's be mispound to the Rebbeinu Shelaylam. We are living through times the likes of which we have not known. We look around us, everything is so funereal, everything is so lugubrious, we don't know where to turn. The only one we could be samech on is Avinu Shebashamayim. That's it! Through tefillah, through tzaraka, through tehillim, through coming together like you did tonight, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I thought, maybe let's ask Hashem tonight at Tefillah. Mida keneged mida. If you see that we are being Ma'ariv Shalom down here, with our spouses, with our family, with our community, and we're being Ma'ariv Shalom with God's Klal Yisrael, let's ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yehi Rotzon Lefanecha. Oyseh Shalom b'mroimav, Hu Yaseh Shalom aleinu. Mida keneged mida. We're trying to be Ma'ariv Shalom. You, please be Ma'ariv Shalom amongst Klal Yisrael, and return us be'edrus Hashem to Eretz Yisrael, Yasher Koyach.
Thank you very much. There's a buffet in the back of the room. Rabbi Shapiro will be up here if there are some private questions that might need to be asked. Thank you for coming. We'll see you next week.